This is Ed Mazur, chairman of the City Club of Chicago. Our luncheon speaker today was William Daley, mayoral candidate for the City of Chicago. Has an extensive background in banking, finance, served as former President Barack Obama's chief of staff and a secretary of commerce in the Clinton administration. Bill Daley was very optimistic about his chances of becoming the mayor of Chicago and of the bright future that he says Chicago has. He says there is some uncertainty, economic fears, social fears, but that we can overcome them. Among the positives, our city is gaining high-income people, we're attracting entrepreneurs, we have a thriving central core, and we're a welcoming city for immigrants. And he gave a great deal of this to the credit of Mayor Rahm Emanuel. Among the negatives, he said, the city has lost almost 400,000 African Americans since the 1980s. Problems with crime, schools, economic isolation. He sees the election of Governor J.B. Pritzker as a real positive. And the one-party control now of government in Springfield, he said, should make it possible and must make it possible to fix the pension problems, to fix the schools, to address infrastructure, and the whole question of crime. He said one of his goals, if elected, will be a 75% reduction in shootings and murders by 2023. He said, I will focus on putting the gangs out of business. We'll have better policing, better training, better use of technology, and then perhaps at a swipe at the current leadership, he said, we will have better leadership in the Chicago Police Department. With regard to education, he said, we have suffered through 30 years of failure. One in three students performs at below grade level in the grammar schools, and only one in five CPS graduate completes college. He said, we have too many schools, not enough kids. We need to give more options. He pledges to develop a plan so that people will be able to attend quality schools closer to their homes. We must fix the pension system, he said. There's a $42 billion deficit at the local level. If we assessed every household in Chicago, that would be a sum of $35,000. We need to avoid new taxes, he said, and he promised a $1 cut in taxes for every $1 in new revenue that comes to the city of Chicago. He said, we must end the old ways. We must grow our way out of problems. When asked how he would differ from what his brother accomplished and his father had accomplished, he said, I come from a big family, and everyone in our family, although we have common genes, is unique. I, in some ways, support what my brother accomplished. In other ways, I am somewhat critical. We need to connect people, he said, with existing jobs. We have to look at new areas, green energy, technology, healthcare, but at the same time realize that there are many, many good jobs in manufacturing and construction. If we can bring jobs to these impoverished neighborhoods, he said, we will revitalize those areas. Finally, he said, government can only be a catalyst. We are not the answer to Chicago's future. In the next few weeks, he said, I will be issuing very specific position papers in the areas of crime, education, infrastructure, and neighborhood development.
I thank you for once again inviting me to the City Club and giving me an opportunity to share my thoughts about our great city and about our future. Let me begin by saying that I think it is a very bright future with unlimited potential. But I have to admit I'm a little biased, just like most of the people in this room, because I truly love this city and never have wanted to live anywhere else. I believe it is the greatest city in the world, and I've been fortunate to travel all over the world. You can't find another city, any place, with a lakefront like ours. You can't find another city full of neighborhoods with as much diversity and character as we have. Look, Paris is beautiful, but it's not gritty. New York is gritty, but it's nowhere near as beautiful as our city. We have just about the right amount of both, and that's what I love about this city. That's what I believe we all love about this city. Let's be honest. What other city in the world, great cities in the world, have dibs? Okay. We're living in a special moment for our city. It is a moment of great promise and a moment of equal uncertainty. In this critical moment, one path could take us forward, and another path could lead us to drift and decline. While there is much to celebrate, there's a lot of frustration out there, disappointment, and even great anger. People are tired of excuses. They're giving up on our city just when we need them most. And there are troubling trends that could divide us both economically and socially. That is not acceptable. We cannot accept that success in one part of Chicago is good enough for all of Chicago. We have to make this city work for everyone. We cannot be two cities. And unless we come together to address our problems, that is what we will become. On the positive side, we're gaining high-income people. It is adding to our tax base. We are attracting young entrepreneurs from all over the world. We are one of the hottest cities for millennials in America. Today, we have a thriving Central Core, and many of our 77 communities are doing quite well. Our home values are rising. Business is thriving. At the same time, immigration has slowed down, due in part to the policies of the current administration in Washington. Chicago has always been a welcoming city for immigrants. From Devon Avenue to Chinatown, from Uptown to Pilsen, diversity is our strength and our competitive advantage. We celebrate our diversity, and we should work hard to maintain it. But the big factor, and the most troubling, is that we have lost nearly 400 African Americans in our city since 1980. That's the size of the entire city of Cleveland, Ohio. Whole neighborhoods are emptying out. Some of this is to be expected. Like every other group, some middle-class African-American families have left for a new life in the suburbs, the big yard and the two-car garage, and that's okay. But they are also leaving because they want safer streets, better schools, and a fair shot at a good life. Worst of all, they're leaving because of economic isolation. They're just not sharing in our city's growth. By one estimate, the cost of economic isolation is over $4 billion a year. We accept this as if there's nothing we can do about it. We surrender as our people are walking away. We have failed these communities, and the impact of this neglect is felt across the city. Today, our population is nearly a million less than our peak 70 years ago. Our schools are emptying. Crime is festering. Our tax base is not big enough to meet our obligations or provide the services which we need. Taxes keep rising year after year, but people aren't getting much for it. Most of it pays for pensions and debt. It hasn't helped to have a state that ignores our problems, doesn't pay its bills, and has allowed our roads and bridges to fall apart. Thankfully, we have a new governor in Illinois. We also have one-party control of the entire state government, so there are no more excuses for inaction in Springfield. They must fix their pensions, rebuild our infrastructures, fund our schools, find new revenues, and help us fight the biggest cause of our declining population, which is crime. The economic and social costs of crime and violence impede our ability to invest and improve our quality of life across our city. Just 9 days ago, a domestic dispute turned violent and left four people dead. They include a doctor, a pharmacist, a young Chicago police officer who left behind a wife and three little kids. They were all cut down at the beginning of their careers, all because of the easy availability of guns. The shooter had a troubled past, but that didn't stop him from acquiring a powerful handgun and a concealed carry license. He fired 40 shots before he took his own life. He had several magazines with him and was obviously planning to kill more people. It's senseless, it's sad, it's tragic, and it's all too common in our city. Every week, we lose an average of 10 people to gun violence. We're going to hit 500 murders this year, and we may have 3,000 shootings. Today, our murder rate is 4 times higher than LA and 7 times higher than New York City. We have more killings than both cities combined. My goal is to reduce is a 75% reduction in shootings over 4 years and a comparable reduction in murders. And it starts with gun control. Every effort to stop the shootings has failed. From the local police to the county, to the state, to the feds, we seem to be unable to get guns away from people who should not have them. We could shut down the Dan Ryan, but we can't shut down the flow of illegal guns from Indiana or even from the gun shops in our suburbs. All right. It's a disgrace, and it's a failure, and we must do everything possible to get guns off our streets. We need tougher laws. We need tougher sentencing and tougher regulations for gun dealers. Second, we need to focus on putting gangs out of business for good with better policing and more technology. First of all, we need leadership at every level that is committed to changing the culture in the police department. We need a major shakeup. Only 1 in 5 murders and 1 in 20 shootings produces an arrest. That is a failure, no matter how you measure it. We know that some police have made mistakes, but we also know that the vast majority of the men and women in the Chicago Police Department are good, honest, and decent people who protect us every single day. We need to support them and give them the tools to do their job. We need a massive investment in training. It will help police deal with the tough situations, and it will build trust, which is vital, between our people and our police. We need new technology, including cameras all over this city. And we need drones that bring information to police quicker. Our city has been slow to embrace proven strategies that have worked in other cities, like violence prevention, which is the third part of my plan. Police can't do it alone. They need partners in our communities, organizations that intervene in gang disputes, and organizations that help young people not only stay out of gangs, but provide them a better path to the future. I will commit $50 million a year for violence prevention. It has worked in New York. It has worked in New York, it has worked in LA, and it will work here. The second big factor driving people away from our city are schools. We've had 30 years of school reform in Chicago, and some people say we're now one of the fastest improving districts in the country. Well, I don't want to spoil the party, but less than a third of our students test at grade level. And just 1 in 5 CPS grads go on to complete college. If you ask public school parents in Chicago how they feel about the system, they'll just shake their heads. They might like their own school, but they're sick of the fight over money and arguments about charters and neighborhood schools and reformers versus unions and testing versus teaching. None of it matters to the parents. They just want their kids to get a good education. And the elephant in the room is the enrollment issue. Simply put, we have too many schools and not enough kids. We have 150,000 empty seats, and enrollment is going to keep dropping as we keep losing people. Parents shouldn't have to send their kids halfway across the city to find a good school. It's partly a safety issue, but it's mostly about quality. Parents are desperate to find great schools. In the coming weeks, I will offer a plan to meet one simple goal: give every child more great options close to their homes. We need to stop arguing about education politics and focus on kids and teachers. My three sisters taught, my daughter taught. I know how tough that job is, and teachers deserve our respect. They also deserve the truth. And the truth is, we won't have the money we need for our schools and for other investments until we figure out how to meet our obligations to our retirees. And that gets to the third big challenge. Our pension system is broken. We have $42 billion of pension debt at the local level. That works out to $35,000 for every household in the city. We cannot tax our way out without making Chicago unaffordable. We can't cut our way out without compromising our quality of life. We must find new revenues, and everything must be on the table. Marijuana, casinos, commuter taxes, real estate transfer taxes, and reforms to the system must all be on the table. The one thing I do want to take off the table is more property taxes. Tax bills next June will reflect new assessments, and trust me, people will be shocked, and they will be angry. I am determined to avoid new property taxes next year, and over my four years, I promise the taxpayers of Chicago that for every dollar of new property taxes, there will be a dollar of cuts first. Our city government is way overdue for an overhaul. Every department will have to stop and rethink its core mission. Consider housing. Today, we have 20 different housing programs with 20 different rules, 20 different goals, 20 different funding streams. And yet, according to housing advocates, Chicago is 120,000 units short of what we need. We have whole neighborhoods of Chicago without any new affordable housing, even as the city creates more programs to address it. So yes, we will overhaul every agency of government with the objective to cut the waste and refocus the mission on serving our people. Government does not exist for the insiders. That's the old way. The new way and the right way is to set goals and then hold people accountable to those goals. If existing programs work, great. If they don't, we will end them because we do not have a dollar of taxpayers' money to waste. In the long run, we have to grow our way out of our financial problems. More people means more homeowners, more families, more children, more jobs, more business activity, and more revenues. And more of what makes Chicago special, which are safe, strong, and affordable neighborhoods. Today I am proposing an ambitious goal: to restore Chicago's population to 3 million people within a decade. Step back for a minute We were once 3.6 million people. Now we're 2.7. It's almost a million less. Fewer taxpayers, less businesses, fewer homeowners, sparser neighborhoods. The city has shrunk, but the government hasn't. And that's partly why we're in financial trouble every year. It has to change, and it must change with growth. The 2020 census is coming. We have a federal administration determined to undercount the undocumented community. I ran the 2000 census at Commerce. I know how it works, and we need everyone to be counted. With another 300,000 people, our tax base will grow, and over time, we'll get billions more in federal and state aid. Revenues will rise. Economic activity will increase. Our schools will fill up again. Our neighborhoods will come back to life. And we'll pay our bills instead of passing on debt to our kids and grandkids. Is it possible? Of course it is. America is growing. The world is growing. We need them to grow here. We need people to come here and to stay here. We need inclusive growth in which everyone benefits in every neighborhood. The first thing we can do is connect people with existing jobs. Right now, there are 500,000 open jobs in our region, and about 60,000 people on the west and south side who need those jobs.
Right.
Now, this isn't simple. I'm not saying it is. Some jobs are far away, distance-wise. Some require special skills. Some people struggle with the cost of childcare and other issues. But we can solve these problems if we have the will to solve them. I'm not the first to name these problems. We've had mismatches in the workforce for decades and countless attempts to address it. Today, we have scores of job training programs. The schools offer hundreds of vocational education programs. The city colleges have aligned curricula around key industries. Career colleges offer degrees in all kinds of specialized fields. There's apprenticeships, internships, job fairs, and recruitment campaigns. And yet, despite all of these efforts, unemployment is 20 to 40% in some neighborhoods, and in some Chicago communities, 60% of young adults are unemployed, and that is a crisis. We need a bridge from the people to the jobs and a commitment to do whatever it takes to help our people cross that bridge. I recently met with people running prisoner reentry programs. They understand that people with a criminal record need extra help to make it. They need counseling and coaching, and they need employers who will give them a chance. Let's talk about the kind of jobs we need to help our struggling communities. Our city has made progress creating new economy jobs, like green energy and tech jobs. Our schools should prepare young people for those jobs by teaching coding and other key skills. We continue to have a very strong market for professional careers in business, healthcare, education, law, and finance. We've added something like 134,000 jobs downtown in the last 8 years. And I give Mayor Emanuel tremendous credit for that. He has been a great salesperson for our city. But we can't overlook sectors like construction, utilities, and manufacturing, where people with a high school degree can earn a good wage. Right now, there are at least 425,000 manufacturing jobs in our region. Thousands of them are open. They pay a living wage for young people, and over time, they can support a family. And you only need a high school degree to qualify. People have declared manufacturing dead for many, many years, but it is still growing. Because of shipping costs and rising wages in other countries, the economics of manufacturing in the U.S. are becoming very favorable. We should make Chicago the center of advanced manufacturing in America, producing products for strong local sectors like healthcare and transportation. So we have a new rail car plant under construction on the southeast side with 170 jobs. These jobs can spur growth, lead to a career, and support families. We have many family-owned manufacturing jobs, manufacturing companies, in Chicago. Many of the people in this room run them and own them. They are desperate for employees. They're hiring kids right out of Austin High School. We cannot give up on them. There's an organization called M-Hub here in Chicago, and they're coming up with very creative new ideas to drive innovation in manufacturing. If we strengthen these core industries, we can rescue these neighborhoods. And once again, give people a job. We can help build wealth and put them on a path to home ownership, making working families in Chicago earn enough to pay a mortgage. Many of them do that, but they don't have any money for a down payment. They have to keep renting. Therefore, they do not build wealth. We must help them. The next thing we need to do is coordinate better our public investments. Every public project, schools, parks, transit, roads, utilities, needs to support a community vision. We have half capital programs and half a dozen different state and local agencies. They have to talk to each other. They must work together. We could target $1.5 billion in public projects to those communities over the next 4 years. And if we are strategic, we could turn $1.5 billion in public money into $5 or $6 billion in private money. And that's the real ball game. As a former banker, former commerce secretary, I spent my life in the business community. Government can be the catalyst, but it is not the answer. We need the private sector heavily involved. Start with small business. Give them a one-stop shop and access the capital. Get rid of the red tape and regulations. Give them city land, tax credits, and other funding sources. Provide expertise from our great business schools and from the corporate sector. We have the talent. Let's make it available to those who truly need it. Ultimately, we need to reach a tipping point in struggling neighborhoods so that the private sector feels confident to invest in those neighborhoods. We have a Department of Planning that does a good job of driving growth downtown. Let's refocus it on our neighborhoods. Clear out the rules and regulations. Help put the money to work. The money is out there. We have state and federal tax credits. We have money in the city. The Neighborhood Fund, the Affordable Housing Fund, TIFs. Federal Opportunity Zones in Chicago could be worth $1.5 billion. New market tax credits could be another $50 million a year. Add it all up, public investments, private investments, tax credits, opportunity zones, and we could put $6 to $7 billion in struggling communities the next 4 years. Right. We need to commit to it and ask every business leader in Chicago to support this, and I will help them understand that our growth strategy, 3 million people, 3 million strong, 3 million together across every neighborhood in Chicago, is the foundation of our city. That is our future. As I've said many times, I am running for mayor because I love this city and want to see us grow. I spent the last 10 weeks in living rooms all across Chicago. I've talked with small business owners, with faith leaders. I've talked with parents. One person told me he's lost confidence in local government. He keeps hearing the same old promises and the same old politicians, but doesn't see results. I talked with a guy who spent time in prison. He has a job, but he can't get a mortgage because of mistakes he made years ago as a young man. I met a small business owner who thinks the city only cares about real estate. No matter what we say to him, that's what he believes. I met a young parents who want to stay in their neighborhood, but they are worried about the quality of their local schools. If they have to pay for a private school, they're more likely to move to the suburbs. And I heard from a businessman who wants to reopen a factory on the southwest side and put people to work. He is ready to invest, but for some reason, the city is holding it up. And saddest of all, a few weeks ago, I met a mom who lost her son to gun violence. He sat with her as he cried. I sat with her as she cried and talked about him. He died at the age of 28, but she still calls him her baby. She said he wasn't an angel. She admits he made mistakes. But he was trying to turn his life around, and even at her encouragement, moved out of the city in their neighborhood. He came back just to pick something up at his mother's house when a bullet found him and took his life. Amazingly, she turned her grief and the pain into action and has become a voice for gun safety, better policing, and justice for victims' families. That's the kind of courage and power we have in our neighborhoods. That's the kind of courage and power that defines our great city. We cannot fix our problems with incremental change. We cannot ignore problems and pretend everything is fine. We won't ease that mother's grief with just our thoughts and our prayers. We have to think big. We have to get bold. We have to set ambitious goals that stretch us. It's not good enough to get back down to 500 murders and declare victory. If we were as safe as New York City is, we'd have less than 100 murders. And we know one is even too many. It's not good enough to celebrate downtown development while our neighborhoods are emptying out. We need every neighborhood to grow. That's not good enough to get 1 in 5 kids through college. Every kid who wants to go to should be prepared to go and succeed. In a nation that's growing, in a world that's growing, we cannot stand still. To make this city the best place to live, work, and raise a family, we need to make it our collective goal to be a city of 3 million people. That's 30,000 more people each year for the next 10 years. That is achievable. With growth as our strategy, we can better address issues like crime, education, pensions, affordability, and taxes. We can extend opportunity to every community. We can make good on our promise to ourselves and to our children. Our problems are not bigger than us. We've faced tough times before. We have always risen to the challenge. I believe in Chicago, as do all of you. I have lived here my whole life. My wife and I, my children and our grandchildren are here. And I want exactly what every other parent wants, a better life for their kids and their grandkids. This is our moment. This is our chance to fulfill our destiny as a proud, diverse, livable, thriving, growing city of neighborhoods. That is who we are. That's why we're so special. That's why I love Chicago, and that's why I am running to be mayor of the greatest city on earth. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bill Daley. If anybody has any questions, hold up your blue card. Members of our staff will come and pick them up. I see that several people have them. So we can forge ahead with some of the questions that have been submitted already. This is from George Sabula with Darwin Realty. Actuaries predict Chicago's pension funds will be unable to pay retirees by 2030 at today's rates of underfunding. What is your solution to this pension problem?
Thanks for the question, George. As I stated, this is, in many ways, the anchor around our necks. It has to be addressed. One of the reasons I wanted to run for mayor was to be part of finding solutions to these problems that are so vexing for us. We must solve this. The truth of the matter is, the state has a worse problem than we have. So we've got to join together, and much of our pension issues relate to actions that need to be taken in Springfield. So I'm looking forward to working with the new governor. I'm looking forward to working with the business community, labor community. And as I stated, I think pretty clearly, this is the single biggest issue that we cannot keep kicking down the road.
Okay, thank you. Great.
This is from Christine Flynn. Christine, where are you? Right over there with Loyola University of Chicago. Your alma mater, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. She wants to know, how will you support female-owned small businesses?
Well, to be honest with you, small business in general has got to be more supportive. That is the heartblood of our city. I've worked for big companies, but the truth of the matter is big companies are not what makes this city special in the business side and the economics. It is a small business, whether it's a grocery store in a neighborhood, whether it's small manufacturing. And as I said, I've been traveling throughout the city rather extensively lately. It is amazing to me, I don't care what neighborhood you're in, you will see a small business, not a flashy sign, none of that, where people are making things and growing things and employing people. On the female-owned small businesses specifically, I think I've got to look at what programs are out there, what's really working. It's kind of what I talked about in overall looking at the government. You've got to look at all these programs, and there are seemingly hundreds of programs on all sorts of things. Do they really work? This is taxpayers' money being used. So let's maybe skinny down the number of programs to help female female-owned businesses and make the ones be more effective, because maybe inherent in your question is that it isn't working really well right now.
Okay, we have a lot of good questions here, very tough ones, too. This is from Josephine Wade. Josephine, where are you?
Right there. Nope.
Okay. Well, she's somewhere out in this vast throng of thousands. The question is, will you look into bonding the Chicago police? For instance, requiring CPD members to self-bond to cover the costs of their, and I'll put this in quotations, bad behaviors.
Mm-hmm. To be honest with you, I don't think the bonding is the answer. I think the answer is to have better training and better police actions and give them the, and weed out the bad actors, of which we've pretty obvious over the last number of years that there are a number of them. Overall, as I said, I do believe that the vast majority of the men and women of the police department do a good job, and they go out every day to do that. But I think the leadership of the police department has to be responsible for the actions of their members, and I do believe better training will fundamentally change a lot of the ways that have gone wrong in the police department.
Okay, I'm going to combine these two questions. They deal with education. Gregory White, where are you, Greg? Back there, down the right field line. And Mark Weiermuller. Mark, where are you sitting today? Okay, by the way, he's a fellow St. Ignatius graduate. Okay. Their question is, what's your vision for CPS? What's your view of charter schools? And with declining enrollment at CPS, why does the school budget and property taxes continue to increase?
There are good charters and there are bad charters. I think the fight over good and bad, first of all, I think we ought to not see any new schools, charter or regular schools, until we get a handle on this enrollment problem. We cannot afford to have a system that's 150,000 empty seats in that. We don't have 624 great principals for each school, and it takes a great principal. So we've got to get real and look at the system and look at what is the goal of this, whatever changes you want to make. My goal will be, as I stated in my speech, better schools and neighborhoods. to make sure we have at least one, if not multiple, level one schools and not a whole bunch of schools with empty seats. There's 60,000 empty seats in level one schools, which are some of the best schools in the city. You know, so I think we have to set a goal. We have to work with the communities. Can't top down this stuff, okay? But say, let's come to a common goal. My goal would be better schools in the neighborhoods so you don't have these kids. I think it's 30% of grammar schoolers travel outside their neighbors to another school. Some of these kids are really little. I see them waiting for a bus or getting on the L. I think it's 60% or more of high school kids go outside their neighborhoods. They're going for quality. We've got to bring that quality back into their neighborhoods.
Shifting gears a little bit, this deals with immigration and that. It's from Pam Roll, City Club member. She wants to know if you support the current state city of Chicago sanctuary state status. If you do, why? And your thoughts on Mayor Rahm Emanuel's status that Chicago be a Trump-free zone.
We have been a sanctuary city since the early 80s. We will maintain our status as a sanctuary city. It is vital to the future of this city that we continue to attract people from around the world. As I said, that's what makes us unique. Lots of people talk. It's a lot of great politics, and people scream about politics. We must have a comprehensive solution to our immigration problem. Forget the rhetoric. Forget all this stuff. It can be done if the politicians get together and do it. Yes, people have to sacrifice, and those who want it their way or the highway on either side, then we're going to stick in this terrible situation with people suffering. But the heart of this city is the fact, going back to the two centuries ago, that people came from around the world to come to make this city what it is today. I don't care, Irish, Polish, German, all over the world came and made this city what it is and continues, from Mexico, Central America, from Europe, from Africa, countries that have recently really sent a lot of great people and made our country better, India, Pakistan, all over. If we lose that, we lose the soul of this nation and this city.
Okay. Since there have been several dailies already as mayor, you know that you're going to get this question. How would a Bill Daley mayor, by the way, it's from Graham Grady, graduate of Von Steuben High School over there. How would a Bill Daley mayor be similar to or different than a Rich Daley or a Richard J. Daley mayor?
Well, if you come from a family with any more than one person, people are different, okay? You cannot lump anyone, any family, each is the same. I'm very proud of my family, but I've had a different career, and I think I'm laying out different proposals in this campaign so far, and I will going forward. This is the 21st century. We're almost a quarter into the 21st century, okay? Things have to be done differently. We have to celebrate that which has worked. But on the other hand, we've got to look at what has not and change our ways going forward. That's what my campaign's about. It's not about looking backward. It's about looking forward, because this city's future is ahead of us.
Thank you. This is from DePaul University School of Public Service. Nick, I'm going to butcher your last name because it's hard to read this. Kachlinagas, where are you at, Nick? Oh, okay. He's over there. Parakalo, Nick, okay? Anyhow, here's his question. Given your vast knowledge of investment and finance, what's your plan to improve the financial condition of Chicago, especially amidst the larger situation in the state of Illinois?
Well, I've touched on some of that already, Nick. I do appreciate the question, because one of the roles I think that a candidate for mayor and as mayor should do is be honest with the people of Chicago and tell them what is the status for this city about some of these major issues. I've talked about them. I will continue. I will do everything in my power to get this right. But it is a huge problem, and we've got to work together. I'm proud of the fact that in my career in the business community and in politics and government, when I served under President Clinton and President Obama, I try to bring people together. We're all different. Some people like to be in your face like our president. I'm somebody who rather bring people together to solve these problems. And if we do not come together, those of us in the city, in the political system, in the business system, in the faith-based organizations, community organizations, and with our legislators and our new governor, we won't solve these problems. And so I think we've really got to work together, and I'm looking to do that because that's what something I've tried to do my entire life.
Okay. This is from Marty Megan. Where are you at, Marty?
Oh. If you're not here, you won't own up to the question, we won't ask it. Okay. This is from Karen Riley with BLC right down here. Can you share your views about MBE-WBE programs that don't result in business growth? Black-owned businesses are not growing. How can you ensure growth under your administration?
Well, I think one thing, we ought to look at all the programs, as I was saying earlier, whether it's MBE, that the programs to try to create more minority businesses have been around for almost as long as some of us. So why aren't they working? You know, and I turn to the community and say, what do we need to do differently than what we've been doing? All well motivated, everybody trying to make this work. I don't believe anybody goes out to not make it work. But why has the system not worked? Why have the private sector not taken, basically, those private sector companies that do business with government and almost mentored minority businesses? I'm very proud of the fact that as a community trustee, I became finance chairman. And I had a meeting with all the trustee banks, and the fund manages money of the fund, and then the banks, individual trustees, manage. So I said to the CFO, what's the percent of minority asset managers, not in the trust money, but in the bank's money? Now, remember, I was with one of the big banks. And they said, well, there's zero managers. I said, zero like in zero? I said, yeah, like zero and none. So I called the bankers together, and I said, look, let me just give you a statistic. You have zero diverse managers of all the money you're managing, all the management, all your whatever style of managing. I said, look, I've been on that side of the table. I know all the stuff you're going to say to me, okay? But this is wrong. This is a city, you know, that's a third, a third, a third. This is crazy, okay? I said, we're setting a goal of 20%. Within 5 months, every one of them was at 20% because they realized that's the right thing to do, and they could do it. But it took a little push. I get it. They're all well-intended. They're all, you know, doing their job, and everybody's got an excuse. But you got to get in there, and you really got to know what you're talking about, and then have a plan to come out of it and stay on top of it.
Thank you. Time for two last questions. This is from Elsie Sy Nybar. Elsie, where are you at today? Back there. Good. She's the senior editor for Via Times News Magazine, serves Asian Americans, so, you know, you could end up being quoted there. Mr. Daley, what made you finally decide to join the overcrowded mayoral race caravan? And what is your number one top priority?
Well, it wasn't as crowded when I joined as it is now, to be frank with you, but I still would have joined. You know, I made the decision. My wife and I talked about it a lot. This is not easy. I've been around government and politics my whole life, and I know how difficult this is. Our friends from the media are here, so I assume everything I say now is quotable. But we have problems. I think I can add something to not only the discussion. I think if I have the honor of winning, I think I can be a good mayor. So, you know what? I'm lucky in life. We got to a stage where I can do this. I want to do it. I want to give something back again to the city. And so I jumped in. Now, a couple of months I may regret it, but that's okay. I know I won't. This is the best thing I've ever done in my life in a professional sense.
Okay, last question. This is from Ray Asher, City Club member. Ray, where are you at? Back there, okay. He's with the Little Heroes Pediatric Cancer Research Foundation. Looking back at your brother's terms as mayor, what would you say that you learned from him in terms of policy decisions?
I would say the one trait of leadership, and I do believe he was a leader, as I do believe my father was, to get really good, smart people around you, listen to them, make a decision, and move on. Make sure you get their best advice, and you listen. And I would hope that I can emulate that for lots of great leaders. I spent a year with President Obama and listened to him and watched them. Make tough decisions, really tough decisions, like the Osama bin Laden raid. And leaders have a certain sense about their abilities. They're not, you know, blowhards by any stretch. Good leaders. They get good advice. They're kind to people. And they make a decision on behalf of the majority of the people and move on. So I think that's what I've learned most from both of them and lots of other leaders.
One last question here. This is from City Club member Dory Wilson, Dory Wilson PR over there on Walton Street. Are you confident that you will be able to positively impact gun control and gangs?
If we don't, our future is pretty bleak. I get the problems of the national, but think about it. Just think about it. We have become immune. About 3 weeks ago, today, I think it was, there were 10 people shot in the city of Chicago. Nobody, big deal. You know, we then stumbled into the weekend and whatever. You know, we've become immune to this. This is not who we are as human beings. And when we get to accept that, when we get to accept the fact that somebody has need for a gun or should have a gun, which was designed, manufactured, and sold as a weapon to kill somebody, nothing else. None of these handguns have shot a deer, knocked a bird out of the sky, okay? That's a lot of hooey by the NRA, which is basically big business. They talk about bankers and their political power. There is no industry in America, but the gun industry is powerful. Who else? And there's a lot of businesses in here. Who else has immunity from a lawsuit? You ever hear of that? Other than federal government. Without their approval, you can't sue them. You can't sue the gun manufacturers for liability, really, and get anything. You fall down the stairs, you'll sue this restaurant. Forget it. You get shot by a gun, by somebody, can't do anything about it. Now, I know we have a Second Amendment, and I am a believer in it. Okay, but this is crazy. You have more guns than people in America? That's just business. That's all it is.
Thank you, Bill Daley. Thank you very much.